serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to everyone in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Allison, alcoholic.
Hey, Allison, welcome. Glad you're here.
And on Zoom, you could.
Hey, I'm Tara.
I got 24 days
away. Hey, Tara, welcome. Glad you're here.
Anyone on Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to the meeting? All right. Well, welcome to our newcomers. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Forward to the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experience will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing step one, part one. Please welcome our panel, John and Ross. I will read the first paragraph on page XXVI, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. All right, page XXVI, the physician who, at our request, well, first, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter, has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And which one of you were going to go first?
Go ahead, John.
All right. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
John. Hey, John.
We'll fly from reality, physical obsession. I remember when I was a kid, I was like, I was 10 years old when I touched my first drink. And I remember after a couple times trying it. But first off, I was completely elated. My body felt good. I did. And it gave me that escape from reality. It did. I hated being in my own skin. And so when I had that burning sensation, that warmness about me, I was like, oh my God, I don't feel like myself. I didn't have that insecurity, the constant nagging of voices in my head. It quieted everything down. And so after trying it a couple more times, I was hooked right off the instinct, but I tried a couple more times and I got hungover one morning. And my brother looked at me and said, you wanna know how to beat the hangover? What? Keep drinking. Oh, that works? Yeah, it worked. It worked very well. So instead of getting hungover now, I started going through withdrawals at a very young age. And I started going through DTs as a teenager. Like, I had my first seizure when I was like, wow, I took that. I started going through DTs at about 20, 21 years old. And I had my first seizure when I was 24 in Hawaii. That was terrible. But I chased the physical obsession because I needed to drink. I needed to keep away from the sickness. I would go days without eating. If I would go a couple hours without a drink, I would start shaking. I couldn't swallow anything. I couldn't hold a spoon to get soup in or a cup to drink anything. If it wasn't alcohol, if it didn't have any sort of alcohol in it, I couldn't drink it. It was soda, water, nothing. And there would go periods of time where I would have to dry out, and drying out was miserable because my body craved alcohol so much. And not only I'm speaking on the mental obsession right now, but the physical, but my mental too. I mean, it would shut my brain down because when I'm not drinking, all I'm thinking about is a drink and thinking about my body and how all this is reacting to me. And like, I just a squirrel without a nut. It was ridiculous. And so, just trying to get out of that was a nightmare. I was living in hell. And the only escape was to put myself into was a jail. Jails were a nightmare. Institutions, they kind of kept me drugged up for a little while. And then hospitals became a good friend because they kept me very drugged up. But I was just living like that for a long time. And it was, I'm 34 now. And the physical obsession left me with, in my 20s, I was homeless. For 8 years wandering around the country. I had had a heart attack and a stroke, six seizures from DTs, constantly seeing the demons, the visuals, the auditory hallucinations, everything. And I developed cirrhosis. I had several stomach ulcers during my mid-20s. And then when I was 28 years old, 27, I was diagnosed with pancreatitis. And at 28 years old, I was diagnosed with chronic pancreatitis, cirrhosis of the pancreas. And before the meeting, I was showing some good people my fun scar. And as of April, I am now pancreas free, which is really funny because you can't like, pancreas produces your pancreas is a very important organ, but they figured out a way where my pancreas now lives within my liver. It's a crazy transplant. If you want more knowledge on it, I will talk about that later. But right now, the physical obsession was something I couldn't escape without physical detainment. So that's all I got.
Thanks, John. Ross, alcoholic.
Hey, Ross.
Thank you guys for having me back at Simple Actions. I was trying to hide from Amy last week. I was doing everything I could. See, y'all know, y'all have hidden from Amy before too. I was hiding from her, and man, she saw me, and I was sitting right over there. And when she locked in, I knew what you were coming for. And I checked my calendar, and my calendar was free. So obviously, I said yes. I'll be here. I'll be back in Norfolk next week. So I'm extremely grateful to be back here. It's one of my favorite meetings. I love coming out to Norfolk and meeting with you folks. My sobriety date is January 23rd, 2015. I do have a home group, the We Are Not Saints group. We meet Saturday and Sunday at 6 in Virginia Beach. We're a big book study on Saturday. We're at 12 and 12 on Sunday. If you're ever free at 6 o'clock, and you want to come out to Chicks Beach, please come check us out. And I do. I got sober by getting a sponsor and working the 12 steps. And I still have a sponsor today, who I'm very close with. I'm absolutely grateful for this program because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 36, and I was baffled. I did not understand how I got here. I did not understand the physical pain that I was suffering. I didn't understand the emotional pain that I was suffering. I didn't understand the financial pain. I didn't understand the relationship pain. Like, I didn't know how it could happen to a swell guy like me. How could a guy like me end up in this miserable place? Now, as I say that, you're probably thinking, well, God, you sure did think a lot of yourself. I absolutely did. Actually, all I thought of was myself. And how I got there, I took my first drink at 15, with two of my buddies. And my first drink was planned. It didn't happen by accident. What was happening was all my friends at school were coming to the bus, they were coming to school, and they were talking about getting high, and they were talking about getting drunk, and they were talking about these fun escapades that they were having. And I was like, man, I want in on that action. So my first drink was planned. Like, we had the destination, we had the 19-year-old brother with the fake ID. Like, we had it all lined up. And I still remember that room above the garage in Kempsville. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And that night was amazing. It was amazing, and it changed my life. I just remember feeling the sense of camaraderie and the sense of, like Bill talks about in his story, when he drank before going off to war, he had arrived. And I felt like, as a 15-year-old lad, like I have arrived. And that night I threw up, as most of us do that first time. I threw up, and when I woke up the next day, and I still remember laying on that couch, and I replayed every second of that night as I laid there. Every second of it, just replaying it over and over again, the laughter, the jokes, the ease and the comfort. Like, it was just so amazing. And I thought in that moment that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to party just like this for the rest of my life. And from 15 to 36, that's what I proceeded to do. At the end, I could give you all a ton of drunkalog, the blackouts, the disappointment, the getting into trouble. Like, I could give you all that, but you already know all that. What happened to me at the end was, I'd gone through every method to try to stop and control my drinking. I had switched to weed only. I had switched to only trying to drink on the weekends. I'd switched to not drinking at all. I'd made tons of promises. Like, I'd done all the things. And none of it worked. And I ended up exactly where Bill Wilson did, where in his story, where he talks about the doctor came with heavy sedative, and the next day found him taking both heavy sedative and alcohol. That combination soon landed him on the rocks. That same combination soon landed me on the rocks. And what the end looked like, that bewildered place that I came to at 36 years old, never had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, the way that I found you guys was 5 years of misery, like not being able to draw a sober breath, constantly going through withdrawals, constantly, my mind just telling lie after lie to get what I needed to get to just survive for the next 15, 20, 30 minutes. And it was painful, and I suffered mightily. But more important than me, all of my loved ones, all of my family, all of my friends, my employer, they suffered just as much, if not greater, than I did. So it wasn't enough for the plight of family members. It wasn't enough for doctors. It wasn't enough for casual folks that had some concern with me. It wasn't enough to be told that I'm just an outright mental defective. Like, I knew that. I looked in that mirror, and I couldn't even stand to look in the mirror, because I knew that mentally I was jammed up. If I could look in the mirror, I was cursing myself for a weekly. Right? So it didn't satisfy me just to be told that there's something wrong with my mind, that I'm just totally screwed up here. When I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned the simple theory that perhaps my body's different. Perhaps my reaction to alcohol is different than the normal drinkers. And there was a ton of relief in that. See, I would have confused that whole thing. But working with the sponsor, reading these couple of paragraphs here, and then obviously the rest of the book, it's a simple definition of what alcoholism is. And the simple definition for me is that when I put a drink into my body, I can't stop. I don't have that shutoff valve. And it was such a relief to know that. We're going to read a lot more about that here in just a few minutes. So I'll save the rest for my next share. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you both. Next reading is going to be on page 28, Roman numerals. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed a habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. John?
I'm John. I'm still an alcoholic.
John.
Yeah, he's good. I should have let him go first. No, my sobriety date is February 17th of 2022. I got sober at 30 years old, and I needed both my hips replaced. And that was what it wasn't death that got me in these rooms. It was the fear of being a 30-year-old paraplegic. I wanted to die for a long time. Alcohol was my solution, and it was my solution to live and die at the same time. I knew it was going to kill me, and that was my way out. Dying an alcoholic death is one thing, but living an alcoholic death is so much worse. Because God, man, when he mentioned the turmoil and shit that I did to my family and friends, like my ninth step was terrible. My first ninth step was terrible. But talking about the allergy, what's really funny? When I was a teenager, I used to break out in these hives. I would get red hives of blotches all over the place, and I convinced my friends I had cancer. And then they would give me a little pity party, and I'd be like, "Ah, oh, screw you guys, y'all are pussies, whatever. Just let me drink." And then a couple hours later, like, "I'll just screw with you. You're all good. I'm good. No worries." And then it would start to fade away the more I drank, which was kind of backwards, but hey, whatever. It's my body. No, the allergy for me, once I start, I don't stop, just like was mentioned. It's just like it's written. And the insanity was that I knew about AA. I was introduced to you guys when I was a teenager. I was 15 years old when a judge sent me to AA. My first meeting was You're Not Alone off Laskin Road. And I remember being a teenager in that group with a bunch of old timers sitting there talking and telling stories. I related immediately, but I compared myself right out. I knew you guys were just as crazy as I was, but when I say compare myself out, when I said I heard stories, that's all I heard. And I looked at myself and I said, I don't have any stories to tell. And so, dang, I went out. I was like, it's not my time yet. And so from there, I would just go to oblivion. I worked at bars at the restaurant in the oceanfront. So that's easy. Being a dishwasher and then a cook, and then next thing you know, I'm working with alcohol all day long. That was the business, that was the game. And being in the back of the house is the best of the house because that's where we can party. But you know what? When I decided to get sober, like I mentioned, it was being a 30-year-old paraplegic. My life was already run to the ground. I knew it was unmanageable. I was trying to manage, but the only thing I was trying to manage was taking how much of a nip I could take off the bottle just to keep away from a shake, just so I could eat a nibble of some ramen noodles or something. Because being homeless for 8 years, you got to learn how to scrap around. And so, oh God, powerless, unmanageability, goddess. Yeah. But still, when I decided that my miracle was I found a surgeon who would do my replacements. And that was incredible because I went through three other surgeons that were like, you're too young, blah, blah, blah. We can't do this. And I know you're reading my rap sheet. It's all alcohol abuse, alcohol abuse, alcohol abuse, alcohol abuse. I'm not dumb. I know what my thing says. I've been 11 institutions, 11 rehabs, jail a handful of times. I know I'm not stupid, dude. I know what you're reading. I'm a liability, is what you're looking at. And so, where's the old allergy? You break out in handcuffs. So yeah, no, I became institutionalized, but still, I found a surgeon who was going to do surgery for me, and he said the magic words, "Get sober, and I'll do it." And by this time, I was so broken, I couldn't go a couple hours without a drink. I would wake up at 4 o'clock shaking with nothing in the bottle next to me, and I got 2 hours till 7-Eleven opens up. It's a 15-minute walk. Okay, I walk up there. They throw me the keys. I go give me a couple 40s, but no. When he said get sober, that was God pulling me up from step one right there. That was like, I'm done. Because I'd been around AA after being in 11, 10 institutions. My number 11th was February 17th. And in 2022 was when I entered my last institution. But still, that was like, I knew about AA. I'd been introduced to you guys. I saw a bunch of happy people, but I thought y'all were full of it because somebody had spiked the coffee. There's no way y'all can be this happy talking about all the morbid shit y'all done. Like, yeah, y'all are crazy. Absolutely. I relate. I'm there now. So, hey, but it's real. This program is real, dude. This fellowship, it's not just a program, it's a fellowship. It's a bond that I have with people who genuinely like me, who are happy to see me. It's wild. I'm happy to see me today. I can have mirrors in my house. It's wild. Shit. I ran away from that four step for a long time. I know we're on step one, but I ran away from that four step for a long time. It's no big deal, dude. It's just yourself. It's just me. That's all I got to see. And, but I got to admit, my real powerlessness, and that there was a solution. There was hope in these rooms. I knew you guys could stay sober. Y'all knew what to do. This was the last house on the block. And when I walked in those doors, my home group is Tuesday and Wednesday night at Azalea Baptist Church down Little Creek Road and over there. And right over Offshore Drive. Tuesday's a big bush study. Wednesday's closed discussion. But still, I remember walking into my first meeting, and it was my a guy from the my Sunday meeting, my church. That's what it's called. He's my neighbor, and he was like, "You know, there's a meeting there Tuesday night." And I was like, "Sure, why not? I'll go." And I was like 2, 3 days out of rehab. I was like, "I know I need to find a meeting. I need to find a meeting." And God puts him right in my path and says, "Look, there's a meeting there at 6 or 7 o'clock or something like that." I show up and I don't know where it is. I have my big book in hand and there's nobody in there. We have this little scout cabin behind the building and I can't find it. There's nobody there. I go over to the firehouse. There's nobody there. And next thing you know, I leave, come back at 7 o'clock and there's a couple cars in there. And I walk in the church and there's a group of people sitting at a table and they all have Bibles and they're sitting around. I was like, "Is this the meeting?" They go, "Yeah, this is the meeting. Sit down." I go and sit down and I have my big book. And they're like, "Wait, what meeting are you looking for?" I said, "AA." They said, "Oh, this is Bible study." But one of my soon-to-be sponsors was in that group. And he says, "Yeah, there's a meeting at 8 o'clock. Come on out." And I right back here in the scout house. That was my reintroduction to AA because I never wanted to do the steps. I never wanted to do this. I wanted to manage my life. I didn't want to do what you guys told me what to do. Yeah, call you every day. I don't want to do that. I pick up the phone barely, dude. Come on. I don't text. I don't call. I don't call my parents. You think I'm gonna call you? God. I didn't. I just wanted to keep running my show, and I didn't see how that worked for me. I didn't want to do what you guys told me to do, even though it was suggestions. I didn't want to do the suggestions until finally I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I have a buddy of mine, and I was at this stage very early. We got up on the topic of shakes, and I asked him, I said, "I got a very important question for you. You wake up in the middle of the night, you're so dehydrated, you go to drink water, right? Nothing's staying down. You go to drink juice, nothing's staying down. You go to eat something, nothing's staying down until you get that first drink in you." He goes, yeah, that's where I'm at." I said, "You better stop or slow down, dude, because it don't get no prettier. That's how you end up with ulcers. That's how you end up with cirrhosis. That's how you die. Like it's those DTs are not fun. They suck. The physical agony that I go through, that I went through, like I wouldn't trade these years for nothing. This is incredible. I get to wake up today and have a bottle of water or a Gatorade next to my bed. I get to drink soda or tea. Like I can eat food without needing a drink today. This program is a blessing, dude. And the gratitude I have for it is nothing compared to, it's just nothing. And that's all I got for it that. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I like this part. You know, this is doctor that says this.
He's
Thank God we're
special.
not a bunch of doctors. The doctor says these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And like when a doctor tells me that, yeah, it just goes in, one ear and out the other. But that's the doctor's prognosis, right? That we can't safely drink alcohol in any form at all for the rest of our lives. But I'm not hearing that. I love the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We do believe that, but we've got a different way of putting it. We put it in, don't worry about what that doctor says. Just worry about today. We're not worried about for forever and ever. All we're worried about is not picking up a drink today. And thank God we do this thing together and not always at the direction of a doctor. I mean, the doctor's not wrong, right? We just have a different way of looking at it. I'm grateful for that. The phenomenon of craving is limited to this class. And when I went through this with my sponsor, we identified people in my life who did not have the phenomenon of craving. So my sister, one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met. We're super, super, super close. We're just alike. Not many brothers and sisters are exactly alike. Well, my sister and I are. And she does not develop the phenomenon of craving. I can't tell you how many times I've drank with my sister. Countless, countless times. And my sister has one, two, three drinks, and no lie, this is her reaction every single time. That's enough for me. I'm gonna call it a night. That has never happened to me. Right? When I put two or three drinks in this body, I get energized. I want to take over the world.
Yeah.
I want to go out and tackle any task. I will go fight the biggest guy in the room because it makes me different. And I don't have that shut off valve like my sister. And I'm looking at Donald. Donald reminded me in early sobriety. He had come to my home group and he was talking about a guy that he used to go out to the bar with after work. I don't remember what your relationship with him was. And you would go out to the bar with this guy and he would have one or two. He'd get that same sensation of, it's time for me to call it a night. And Donald would stay the rest of the night. And you reminded me in early sobriety of my buddy Hank that I worked with. Hank was 30 years older than me. He was kind of my mentor at work. And, you know, we would have these hellacious days at work with just trying to solve the world's problems. Nothing was working right. It was a long day. And damn it, we'd have to come in the next day and we'd have to do it all over again. And Hank and I would look at each other and we'd say, let's go out for a drink. Let's just leave this place, go out for a drink. We'll come back and tackle it tomorrow. And Donald, you reminded me of this really early in sobriety, and this would always happen. Hank and I would go to the bar, and of course, we'd pick a bar. I would pick the bar because I wanted to pick the bar where I would know people at the bar. And Hank would have the one or two drinks, just like Donald's buddy. And he would say, phew, that's enough for me. It did for him exactly what alcohol was meant to do. It kind of washed the day away. He was tired. He was relaxed. He knew he had a busy day tomorrow. He went home. I did not. All my friends were at the bar. And all my friends had the guy's phone number to call to make the party go a little bit longer, right? So, like, those situations would happen to me constantly. Well, I'm not like my sister. And I'm not like Hank. When I pick up a drink and I put it into my body, it is on. I have a different reaction to alcohol than the normal drinker. And I don't know if I would have, you know, been one of these guys in 1940 who just had this book delivered to him in the mail, you know, and read this. I don't know if like that would have come to me, but through work with a sponsor, through going by this book page by page and reviewing the words and the scenarios, like he stopped and he asked me, he's like, Ross, think about some normal drinkers in your life. Think about the times that you've drank with them. Like, how is their reaction to alcohol different than yours? They don't develop the phenomenon. And then I would explain to him what I just did to you. And he'd say, they don't develop the phenomenon of craving, but you do. And you know what? And Amy talked about it in our prayer before we came in here. There is such beauty for me in surrendering to the physical, right? It's not just up here. It's not just that I'm a rotten SOB who has destroyed my life and everybody around me. It's that I can't help it. When I pick up a drink, I have a different reaction to everyone else, and it is a thing of beauty. And once that reality sets in, once that clear message is given to me, I'm in a place where I can accept that. And you know what? There's not a damn thing I can do about it. I can't take a Zyrtec. You know, I can't take an EpiPen. Like, none of that works for the disease of alcoholism. The only thing that works for me in the disease of alcoholism is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. It's the only thing that keeps me from the drink. And if I stay away from a drink, then I don't kick off the phenomenon of craving, which gets me drunk and destroys my life. Right. So I have to keep coming back and learning these things and doing these things with you all and with another alcoholic. Thanks.
Thanks for
Thank you
sharing.
both. Next page, 28 Roman numerals. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, they cannot, after time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. Until they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of esprit, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. John.
John, I'm an alcoholic.
John.
The elusive feeling. Yeah, the feeling, like at first it was fun. You know, it felt good. It was all momentarily. It's all it was, just momentarily. And like you said, I lived for the next drink. That's exactly what I did for. I wanted to ch I chased that drink. I chased that feeling. I chased the escape, the reality. I didn't want to be here. And so that numbing sensation is really what I wanted. I wanted to numb. I didn't want to feel. Feeling hurt, it brought up emotions, pain, just torture, agony, past traumas, nightmares, all this crap, just any sort. And the worst feeling that I ever actually really felt was care. I hated caring about things. I hated, because being disappointment, I guess, better. I hated being disappointed. I was already a disappointment, I felt. And so disappointing others, like by trying my best, only made me worse. So that just made the drink even better. I would drink in spite. And but he said something touching on the mo and touching on the momentarily. I remember when I so in 2020, when I got diagnosed with the cirrhosis, I was hospitalized for a month and a half at DePaul. Rest in peace. That place saved my life. They helped me out a lot. But I was hospitalized for a month and a half right at the beginning of COVID. And they kept me drugged up. Like they really did. They kept me on a lot of pain medicine. And when I got out, a month and a half of being in there, I lasted 3 days before I picked up a 40 ounce. Right back off to the races. That old cliche, once too many, a thousand is never enough. I hate it, but it's so true. It's never been one. I wouldn't cross the street for one. It's never been one drink. I can't go home and just relax like that. No. Close the bar down. But I was an isolated drinker. Because I wasn't invited to parties or anything because I drank way too much. Like, I was the kid to get rambunctious and break and steal your crap. So, yeah, I got that was exactly me. And that's what I did. So, people didn't invite me to parties in high school. Nobody wanted me around. So, I created a little shack in my back. And if you partied like I did, all right, you're welcome. If you couldn't, get out of here. You know, like it was that point. And I just ran my life like that. But let me see the page real quick. Thank you very much. So yeah, firm resolution never to drink again. How many times? I swear to God, get me out of this one. I'll never do it again. Oh gosh, I love them foxhole prayers. But seriously, when I came into the program, like my first sponsor, he picked me. He was an 80-year-old man named Stan. And this is after coming to the Tuesday and Wednesday group for let's see, a 30-day program. I was about 60 days in when I got my first sponsor, my first real sponsor, because I've been around AA for a long time, but finally in and actually willing to do the work. That's where my feet hit the ground and I was like, all right, it's time to go. Time. So I just dove right in, man. And he was a short man named Stan. He was 80 years old, retired Navy chief, very colorful vocabulary, by the way. He was an excellent guy. Rest in peace. He passed away back in 2023. And that's a whole nother story on its own. But I found me another sponsor right afterwards, the next day, actually, because I didn't know what to do. But I remember when I mentioned at the night I didn't have a sponsor yet. He hobbles up to me and goes, "Here's my number. Call me on this little piece of paper. Here's my number. Call me." And I was like, "All right, cool." And so I went home. I prayed because I've been praying at this point. I believed in God. I did. I believed in God and the devil. And I prayed to both of them because I know God wanted me to live and the devil wanted me to drink. So, hey, I was in both worlds. But I would pray during sobriety. I was praying to God. And I remember that next day I called Stan and he goes, "All right, that's step one. That's willingness. Are you ready to get to work?" "Yes, let's go." I met him up at his house and that's when we started reading. And then we went through the 12 and 12 and the gosh, I can't believe it, man. Time has flown by. Like it was just yesterday when I was at his house doing step one. Is your life, are you powerless over alcohol and is your life unmanageable? I said, "I'm not powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over life. I can't control Jack, dude. Like I've run my ship into the sea. Like I am shipwrecked." And I love that spot. And there's a solution where it says, we're like the passengers on a ship, and like whether the camaraderie that comes off of it, you know, from passengers to or from crew to ship to captain's table. God, it's like it's the fellowship not only is the best thing, it's one of the best things about this program, because I can call any one of you guys at a moment's notice whenever I'm in despair, because life gets life. I'm still powerless over life. That's completely true. Today, I have a choice if I can drink or not. And I don't want to drink. I'm gonna die, dude. I don't want to die. Like, I used to live for that, but no. I don't have a desire to die today, man. I have zero drink left in me. And I love the analogy that I've been saying for the past 3 years, is that I am the kid at the arcade with his last token. I can't put this in the machine. I'm a cat on its ninth life. Like, I can't get hit by a car. I don't have another drink in me. So there's some people like, oh, I have another relapse, but I don't have another recovery. No, I don't have another drink. I'm gonna die. Like, my body's so shot, and I just can't believe I'm still alive today. Like, if y'all don't believe in miracles, what are you doing? Look in the mirror. We're all miracles, you know? Like, if you don't believe in miracles, look up here. I'll show you my scar afterwards. Like, it's all right. It's okay to believe in something bigger than yourself. And this program is something bigger than myself. There's people in here doing something that I couldn't do. I tried being my own sponsor for years. That never worked. And so, you know, I just kept getting drunk. And so I just finally, once the word surrender is the best word, because right there, like, the allergy I have is when I take one, it's too many, and 1,000 is never enough. Thanks for letting me share.
Nice. Love that you just mentioned miracles. I was having a conversation with a friend not that long ago, and a friend that's not in here with us. And he, you know, was just asking questions about the program. You know, he knows that I do a lot in here. And he asked me, he said, Ross, why do you do it after all these years? Like, why do you, you're not required to. Like, why do you? And it's for the miracles. You know, I don't get to see miracles in the real world, like outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I don't get to witness miracles, but I get to witness them all the time in here. Amen. You know, so I come for two reasons. I come to remind myself of step one,
mm-hmm.
that I'm an alcoholic and I need the solution. And I come for the miracle. Like, I come to see John get sober, right? And all these guys that get to come into my life, get to see their families rebuild, get to watch them lose jobs, get jobs, and like tackle all these things without picking up a drink. Like to come from where we come from,
mm-hmm.
that's a miracle.
Yeah.
And I don't get that anywhere else but Alcoholics Anonymous. So those are the two reasons that I come today. Man, what a freaking miracle.
Yeah.
We got more doctor talk again. This is obviously written by the doctor, but we got more doctor talk. And he says, the only thing that's required of you is to follow a few simple rules. But the doctor says it's a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God you guys didn't tell me that it's a requirement, right? I don't like to follow rules. None of us do. None of us in this room like to be told what to do. And it's just a character trait that we all share. None of us like to be told what to do. I don't want to be required to follow any rules. If you tell me that I got to follow rules, then I'm going to do the exact opposite, even if my life's on the line.
Mm-hmm.
But that's doctor talk. Now, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. What he says is absolutely right. But thank God you all have a different way of putting it.
That's right.
You all tell me, Ross, if you want what we got, we just suggest that you do what we do.
That's right.
Right? And it's a lot. If for whatever reason, that's a lot easier on my ears. I can take that, but I can't take required to follow a few simple rules. Once again, both are right. I just like the way that you guys do it better. It says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And I think when I read this for the first time, I think what makes me an alcoholic is that I love the effect produced by alcohol. I don't just like it. I've centered my whole life around it from the age of 15 going forward. And when I like it so much that I like to go on trips that last days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to go on benders that last a week. Like, that's the type of stuff that I like to do. I you know, thank God, like, the phones weren't that smart. When before I got sober, it was good for me, but it was terrible for my poor wife, you know, because it was the I'd already made a firm resolution, like it says here, I'd already made a firm resolution with myself and with her that I'm never going to drink again. And I remember this one instance. Is a fantasy football draft, and my wife is a doula, and the guys that I do fantasy football drafts with, like I'm probably going to be out for a couple of days, and that's the typical that's the typical party that we throw. And when I left for the fantasy football draft, after making the weekend before a firm resolution that I'm never going to drink again, and I meant it, like with every piece of my soul. My wife is a doula, and she was helping deliver one of our best friend's kids the next day. They had to be at the hospital at 6 a.m. Now, when I left for that fantasy football draft, well, my buddy Kenny picked me up, and she knows Kenny. She said, "You promise you're not going to drink?" I said, "Oh no. I made the promise last week. I'm not going to drink. I have to be at Jenna's. I have to be at the hospital at 6 a.m. At 9 a.m. Saturday, Kenny and I pull up in a taxi cab. I had forgotten all about the appointment that she needed to make. And the look on her face as I'm happy opening the door, thinking that she'd be super excited to see me, and I brought Kenny with me. She
That's
was
funny.
she wasn't very happy. And that's what happens to me. Like, and then what do I do after that? I got a 2-year-old that I got to take care of. Kenny has got to find a place to sleep in my house. And I'm hung over from that for a week. And I've disappointed my wife, and I've disappointed my friends, and it's just another in a series of letdowns after a firm resolution never to do this again, but yet I can't stop drinking. And this paragraph describes me to a T. Now, the beauty in that is that I get to this miserable, dark place, and I am that very same person who seemed doomed, and I've got so many problems, I despair of solving even a single one of them. But after I work these steps, I find that I'm no longer thinking about alcohol. I find that slowly but surely, I'm only telling little white lies. Like, I'm not telling the big ones anymore. I'm still telling little white lies, but I'm slowly but surely getting better, and I'm not even thinking about alcohol. And I love what it says about despairing of solving the problems. My sponsor, because I had a million problems when I come in. I got all these problems, and I remember like talking to my sponsor about it. Like, what am I going to do though about all these problems? And he kept promising me this. He said, "Ross, if you work the 12 steps and if you get in the middle of AA, your problems probably won't get solved." He's like, "I'm not going to tell you that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that your problems are going to get solved, but what I can tell you is that they will die of neglect." And that is exactly what happened. I can't tell you that any of those problems like were magically solved one day. All of a sudden, just like alcohol, I wasn't thinking about my problems anymore. I was just thinking about what I had to do today to stay sober and to give a little bit back in this life instead of taking from this life. And I only learned that through the course of working this program and doing these steps with a sponsor. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks both. Next reading is on Roman numeral page 30. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomena of craving. This phenomena, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It may never be, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. John.
Yeah, entire abstinence. That's the fact right there, dude. I don't know when the obsession left. All I know is that I remember when I was 90 days, I had a video a friend of mine from Colorado. He called me up when I first met him. It was back in 2016. He was a heroin addict, and we were living in this tiny. He had this tiny home right outside Steamboat. We were living in Craig. And he was using, and I was like, "Dude, put that crap down here. Drink this. This will kill you less. Like it won't kill you as quickly. You'll be all right." And he did. He put the dope down. But I remember when I was 90 days, he called me up on a video chat, and he's in despair. He's all in self-pity. Oh, poor me, poor me. Instead of drinking, he has a needle, and it's all fentanyl. And I'm like, don't do it, dude. Don't do it. Oh, my girl left me, went to Denver, blah, 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 blah. Don't do it. Just don't do it, bro. Like, I can't do anything for you. He's in a tiny home in the middle of God knows where. I can't call the cops to like come save him. So, like, yeah, that was the first thought that cropped my head was, I don't care if he goes to jail. At least he's gonna be alive. No, he decided to go. I mean, there was nothing. I was powerless over that, first off. And so there was nothing I could do. So my only job was to keep him awake for 45 minutes. And he kept fading out back and forth, back and forth. His breathing is getting shallower and shallower. And I remember finally, like 45 minutes, like I kept like smacking my hands, like, hey, get up here, sing me a song, tell me a story, tell me a joke here, let me see, I'll do something. Like, let's stay up, stay up. And he, 45 minutes, he lay down on the bed and I just slapped my hands really hard. And he jumped up and his arms just spread wide. His eyes were on the back of his head. He a big gasp of breath and just collapsed. And he overdosed. I hung up the phone immediately. And within a very short time, I felt three things of gratitude. It was gratitude. First off, that he's not suffering anymore. Because I remember how much I prayed for that every night to like not be suffering anymore. I prayed for death every single night to not wake up. But at least he's not suffering anymore. The second one was that that could have been me. That's not me. That's gratitude right there. And the third reason, which hit me a couple hours later, was that, damn, I didn't even think of a drink. Huh, when did that happen? Holy crap. And then when it finally crossed my head, well, it ain't gonna bring me back. It ain't gonna bring him back. It ain't gonna solve my problem. So just gonna ruin my mess. Like, I don't wanna do that. So I can't say when the I think the obsession left. Somewhere in the night, the thief took it, and that's okay. He can have it. Like that's he could take that TV. I don't care. It was colorblind anyways. It didn't work for me anymore. But you know what's really funny is like as soon as he gets done sharing, I have brilliant thoughts that pop in my head, and then we start reading again, and they switch all over. But no, there was the thing I wanted to touch on about the hospital again was when during 2020, the doctor came in. And he said, I've got three things of bad news for you. And I'm expecting death, right? And so he gives me a death date. He says, son, I'm 28 years old. And he says, son, you're not going to make it to 40. And what's my thought? That's 12 years away, dude. I'll be all right. You know, that's 12 years away. I'll be fine. Don't worry about that. And then because I had reservations, 100%. I didn't care. You keep me doped up, that's only going to last for so long. But then the other two is that I'm going to be in pain and nauseous for the rest of my life. And pancreatitis, for those of y'all that have it, it sucks. It's a nightmare. It really is. It's no joke. Like even just eating with it really sucked. But I did that. I suffered for sobriety and I suffered with grace because AA gave me a life better than I could ever imagine, man. Like I'm t this the miracle, dude. It's incredible. Like they had a surgery, which today I don't have a pancreas, but you know what? Again, I'm alive. I can eat whatever I want as long as it's balanced. Don't get me wrong. I have to have a balance in my life, but I can eat food today without getting sick. I'm not in pain today, guys. Guys and gals, it's amazing. And the first drink, no, thank you. I completely forgot everything else, but you know what? All I know is this fellowship is just phenomenal. For those of you that are new, stick with it. You do not need to go down the route a lot of us have. You don't need to go down my route, that's for sure. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. Living an alcoholic death, that's terrible. Don't do it. But the reservations, my reservation today is to stay sober for tomorrow. So that way I can wake up and try to do better and be better than who I was today. You know, tomorrow's another day. Hopefully, by the grace of God, I'll be able to wake up and say, hey, how you doing, world? My name's John, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And again, I forgot what we were talking about. So, yeah,
You
that's
nailed
it.
it.
That's it. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
Doctor's talking again, and he says that the only relief we have to suggest for you is
Abstinence.
entire abstinence. And
That's
yeah,
right.
it's just more doctor speak, you know, like that. I don't want to I don't know. I can't think that far ahead because what am I going to do at weddings? And what am I going to do at my kids' graduation? And what am I going to do if somebody dies? And what am I going to do if my wife leaves me? And what about all these things? Like, oh, what can I drink then? Like, oh my God, how am I going to make it through those situations? And no. You got to say, Ross, none of that's happening today.
That's right.
We're not worried about eternity. We're worried about right now. Don't take a drink today. And again, the doctor's not wrong. But I take your message. I take your message, and it's what gets to my heart. There's a lot of different types of us in here. Man, I'm extremely blessed in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. God has put me in Chicks Beach, which has a lot of drunk people. A lot of drunk people live in Chicks Beach. And some of them want to get sober, and when they do, they kind of stumble upon my home group. So I've been extremely blessed to have just a ton of guys over the years come into that home group, and ask me to work with them. They've seen something in me that they like, and they say, "Can you walk me through these steps? I'm dying. I'm dying. Can you tell me how you did it?" And spent lots and lots and lots of hours with these guys, and it's a beautiful thing. And what I've come to realize is that there are a lot of different types of drinkers. Lots of different types of drinkers. I've worked with guys that didn't start drinking until they were 40. Yeah, I've worked with guys that, drink once every 6 months because they don't really think about it that much. But when they do drink, they get drunk and they end up in handcuffs. Like I've worked with all these different types of guys, right? And I've worked with guys like me that drink every day. And the one common thread, right? Because a lot of us will try to work our way out of this program by identifying ourselves out, right? Because I didn't drink quite like that guy. I didn't have the same experience as you. My experience is completely different. I never ended up under a bridge. I never got arrested, blah, blah, blah. Right? But the simple question comes back to, tell me what happens when you pick up a drink. Tell me what happens when you pick up a drink. So the guy that drinks once every 6 months, what happens when you pick up a drink? I get insanely drunk and I black out and I end up in handcuffs. Well, the book here says that all of us, regardless of our drinking patterns, have but one symptom in common, that we can't start drinking without developing that phenomenon. Something happens to us that's different. For whatever reason, our physical makeup doesn't say, "That's enough. I've had it for tonight. It's time for me to go home and go to bed." Doesn't work like that with the alcoholic. With the alcoholic, as it's suggested in this book, is that we have an allergy, whether we drink every day, whether we drink every 6 months. If we drink and we get drunk and we lose all control once we put that first drink in us, then well, maybe this book is worth exploring. Maybe this program is worth exploring. Maybe checking out what we do here with this fellowship that you were talking about. I mean, if you're new, like this really is an amazing place. I've been looking for friends all my life, right? I've been looking for friends sometimes in all the wrong places, right? And it's funny, I remember early on this like thought that I had about Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I tend to only hang out with people that drink and do drugs, like I drink and do drugs. Like that's, if you don't quite do it like me, then at some point I'm going to leave you in the dust, and we're no longer going to be together, right? And so I've always enjoyed that camaraderie. And you know what? I have it here. The same people, you guys are the same people that I hung out with out there.
That's right.
Drank yourself to oblivion, drug yourself to oblivion, couldn't stop. Pissed everybody off, disappointed the wife, disappointed the husband, lost your job, ended up in jail. Like, that's the people that I like to hang out with. I just choose to do it with people that don't drink anymore, right? And I found those people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, John, I completely agree with what you say to the new person. It's a wonderful thing to be a part of, and I'm fortunate in my life. My wife is also an Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came in, she found that she couldn't stop drinking either. And 6 months after I came in, she came into the program. And those of you that know my wife know that we took, Like our paths to sobriety were completely different. Like I was hit with it immediately. Like I was on fire. I was doing all the things. I was meeting all the people, and my wife is not that person, right? It took her a much longer time inside of Alcoholics Anonymous to get comfortable with other women, to get comfortable with being in a group, to get comfortable with sharing. And selfishly, I'm so thankful for that experience that she went through, because it allows me to work with guys that are going through that same experience. Because for some of us, it is very hard to come in and like tap into this whole fellowship thing. I'm just going to encourage you to stick around for when that promise comes true. Because just like not picking up a drink is going to come true if you work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the barriers inside of here will drop away too. And it talks about it, and we'll read about it later. Like, this is an experience that you don't want to miss. You will meet the best friends of your life right inside of these rooms. And I'm not just saying that in what I've seen and what this book, because the book says the same thing. I've experienced the same thing, but I've witnessed it. I've witnessed these miracles for myself. The folks that stick around really do find a different dimension of living through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you both. I'm gonna close it out with the last reading.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I heard a fella say when I was a newcomer, he said, "If you try to control your drinking, you might have a problem." That's it.
Thanks,
All
John.
right, the last reading, page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it will vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. Let's give John and Ross a round of applause. All right, I'm passing around the seven tradition baskets. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees, encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Well, nobody else is going to tell you, I will. So Saturday is the fourth step workshop. Flyer in my phone, just one more. So November 15th was Saturday, fourth step workshop from 10th Street, the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church on Lanskin Road. Coffee and donuts available. Lunch will be provided. Workbooks will be provided. Bring a big book and an open mind. That's the only one I got.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Heather.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands.
Nice.
All right. The literature table is over there, which you can fold, you can take. If you need a book, work with us. We'll just come ask me and we'll get you a book. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. If you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join us for the fellowship after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella here on Colonial. Down, if you need directions, come talk to me. I'll let you know that as well. Again, let's thank John and Ross. Thanks to all participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and thank them personally. I have asked Forrest to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Forrest, alcoholic.
Forrest.
A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for a man who is still for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great factor for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us on as you trudge the road to happiness. May God bless you and keep you.
All right, we have a fabulous way of closing.
Fabulous.
Fabulous.
Don't go.
He loses that.
Sounds like we're part of Dallas, John Ross. We're watching the show.
Yeah.
J.R. Ewing. My son is John.
All right, who's Father?
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. Back. It works when you're working.
Awesome.